Hi, everybody. Thanks very much for checking out Telich Talks. Mike DePasquale is my guest this week. He's a former broadcaster at Channel 8 in Cleveland, one of my former colleagues, good friend. And Mike has been in Miami since the mid-90s, and he's really flourished as a sports broadcaster. Many awards he has compiled over the course of his career. But Mike is a sports broadcaster at Channel 7 in Miami, and he has covered everything from the World Series to Super Bowls to NHL playoffs to Olympic Games, so on and so forth. Quite the resume of covering sports in South Florida. And the reason I wanted to have Mike on top of the fact that he himself is an amazing athlete, a bobsledder, an Olympic weightlifter, so many great accomplishments in his career as an athlete, as a master's athlete. On top of that, we wanted to get to the immediacy of what's been going on down in Miami with Lionel Messi going to Inter Miami. Mike has a good relationship with David Beckham, who of course is the man that brought Messi to South Florida. And he is now part of the throng of media that is covering every move that Lionel Messi is making down there in Miami. So I wanted to sit down and chat with Michael about this. Good old friend of mine. Hope you enjoy the interview. Mike DePasquale of WSVN Television in Miami about coming to America, Lionel Messi, and the soccer sensation seen round the world. Here's Mike DePasquale. Mike, we have been in touch with each other over the years since you left Cleveland and went down to Miami and have had an outstanding career at WSVN. But at this stage in your career, Mike, this has to be one of the most wild things that you have covered with Mr. Messi, Lionel Messi, coming to Miami. What's it been like?
Well, we, you know, when we got LeBron and had the big three, that was a South Florida extravaganza, and also throughout the NBA, and LeBron, of course, is a worldwide figure. But with Lionel Messi, this has gone up tenfold from the standpoint of he is an iconic soccer player known worldwide. And just to give you an example, Inter Miami's Instagram went from 1 million to over 11 million on the day that they signed him. It has been a lot of fun. You get a taste of what it's like covering players, whether it be in La Liga, whether it be in the Premier League or Serie A. You get to shoot the first 15 minutes of practice. They don't talk after practice necessarily. Maybe the coach. Lionel Messi has yet to talk in a press conference setting, but it's just been a lot of excitement. It's been something that is global. And it's brought a lot of attention to Miami, Inter Miami, the MLS. And Friday night against Cruz Azul, when he had that free kick and scored the goal to avoid going into extra time in another half, it was amazing. It was written as you would in Hollywood for Hollywood ending. So it's been a lot of fun so far, and it's just going to be the point now with Inter, they're 12 points out of the final playoff spot, the wild card spot, and if they can make it up with 12 games to go. But it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of worldwide attention. I mean, Tuesday, his first practice, there were 200 media members credentialed from not only the U.S., but from India, the U.K., Mexico, Central America, South American countries. It's been a crazy experience. I've seen nothing like this, not even a Super Bowl.
Wow. Well, I mean, you mentioned earlier, of course, LeBron down there in 2010 when he came with the big three. Is this like 10 times as much hype that it was back then? Because that was a pretty darn big deal when LeBron went down to Miami 13 years ago.
It is from this standpoint. That was big for South Florida.
Yeah.
And throughout the NBA had ripple effect. But this is global, and you have people now, for example, Friday for his first game against Cruz Azul, there are people that came from other countries just to see this game. I'm not talking just about Argentina where he's from. There were people from Finland, Sweden, Portugal, Spain that came just to see his first game, just to fly into and paying upwards, if you could get a ticket at $300, but paying upwards of $1,000 for tickets that were $26 before he arrived.
Wow. Wow. That's just amazing. The amount of attention and the excitement level just absolutely through the roof. But Mike, you've been down there for years and you've had a great taste of covering the MLS franchise down there and your relationship as a professional with the man that brokered this, the man that made this happen, David Beckham. What has that relationship been like? What's it been like covering MLS down there? And then where do you see it going with the Messi connection and you know, what can happen down the road for them?
Well, Beckham tried for 10 years to get a franchise in Miami. He had to go through a lot of obstacles, go over a lot of hurdles. So my relationship with Bex is great. I mean, he'll talk to you. He's up front. He'll tell you exactly what his plan was and continues to be. And their long-range plan is Messi has a 2.5-year deal, which gets him through 2025 with an option for another year. They still want to build a new stadium that seats close to 30,000 down near Miami Airport. Right now they play at Dry Pink Stadium, which originally held 17,000. Now they put in more seats to hold just about 22,000.
Okay.
So their plan is hopefully that he has that ripple effect, that impact where people will embrace themselves not only in South Florida, the franchise, but globally. That's their long-term goal. And their long-term goal is it's good for Inter Miami, but it's also good for the MLS because games that are going to be in Columbus and Cincinnati, those tickets that were $15 are going for $300 now when Inter Miami plays at those sites.
Yeah, that's really exciting to know his impact around the league. And this is still, even though he is at an advanced age, Mike, this is still a very viable player because it wasn't that long ago he was spearheading his country to the world, to a championship in the biggest soccer tournament in the world. It only takes place every 4 years. You mentioned he hadn't talked yet. I would imagine his exposure to the media is going to really be controlled because don't you expect, Mike, that there will be in-house media opportunities that will be filmed and will be shot by them and will be disseminated by the club and by MLS? And you know, I could see documentary like the Formula One documentaries that's been going on for seasons upon seasons. We seem to be in that era where teams – want to put out their own kind of program. Do you get that sense that that may be happening coming up?
I do, and I also think that there's one more League's Cup game as of right now, but their MLS season resumes for Inter August 20th. So I would think as they make a push to get at least that final wild card spot in the MLS East, the ninth spot, that he's going to talk once it starts August 20th. I would assume that he's going to do that.
That's going to be exciting just to see. And this seems to be a ready-made spot for him anyway because of the enormous population of folks from South America or with connections to Central America and, what it is like, just the atmosphere down in Miami. And you guys do celebrities very well, you know, right? Isn't that the way it is in Miami? I mean, celebrities are – you see them all the time.
I do at certain events, and for the Friday night game against Cruz Azul, LeBron was there, Kim Kardashian was there, Mark Anthony was there. It's, you know, people want to be seen. People want to be a part of it. And on any – for any given day, whether it's a day game or night game, you see celebrities all the time in that area where David Beckham sits with his wife. There's always celebrities there. I mean, it's a totally different atmosphere now, even more, but even before when Bex was there, it's just, you don't know who's going to be there. And it's A-list stars would just want to be a part of it and just be there, whether it's to be seen. They know nothing about soccer. They just want to be there.
You know, Mike, the way the media has grown and the way the world's gotten smaller because of social media and the internet and things of that nature, if you were to say the Messi coming to America thing is a 10, what was the Beckham coming to America on that scale several 13 years ago? What was it when he came to Miami? What on a scale of 1 to 10 would that have been?
Well, you know, when he came to the LA Galaxy in 2007, that was the biggest thing with the MLS prior to Pelé coming to the North American Soccer League in the 70s.
Yeah.
So that was big. But the impact that Beckham had with the LA Galaxy, and they won the MLS Cup while he was there, the championship, that didn't have a long-lasting effect as far as growing soccer in our country. This is going to be a little bit different because, I believe – because you have a lot more kids playing the game and the impact of social media, and there are more MLS clubs now. I think this is going to have more of a lasting impact. I don't agree with ownership saying that they feel that this will have the impact of making the MLS among the top three leagues in the world, whether it's Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, or the Bundesliga in Germany. You know, Serie A in Italy and Bundesliga in Germany. I don't believe that's going to happen because you're getting players who still are very talented, but on the back ends of their careers in their mid-30s. Messi's 36. Sergio Busquets, who they got from Barcelona, one of his former teammates, is 35. Jordi Alba, who they also got from Barcelona to play with Messi, he's 36. So you're not getting players in their prime age bracket of mid-20s, going into their 28, 29, 30 years old. So I don't believe that's going to happen because you're going to have to pay a lot of money for these players as they're paying for Messi. He's making $50 to $60 million per season. Yeah. That's not including the revenue cut he's getting from Apple TV and Adidas. So I don't think they're going to be among the top three in the world league-wise, but they're going to be at a level where guys at that age bracket, Mbappe, if he gets into his 30s and he wants to come to America, there's going to be a club that's going to sign him. They're going to pay him the money because he's going to draw like Messi is drawing right now.
Mike, you just did mention Mbappe, and I just saw something in the last day or so that a team in Saudi Arabia is looking, you know, this is upwards of like $300-400 million for him to go there and play 1 year, one season. I mean, the money, maybe we should say the Saudis' money is just, you know, out of this world compared to other parts of the world. But, and we've seen it play out with the LIV Golf situation there. But this is just insane. And I think you're on to something there. There's just more and more stars in the galaxy of soccer in the world, football in the world, and more and more spots on the globe or in the globe want to get these players to their teams and expose because there's just so much interest in this sport worldwide. You just said what the Instagram thing went from a million to 11 million. It's probably climbing as we speak right now. The future for this is just absolutely astonishing, I think. And with, you know, like the Women's World Cup team doing what they're doing, trying to do what they do, the men's national team trying to become better and be more of a force on the world scale and stage, the sky really does seem the limit, unlimited what could happen in the sport as it does really come to America with more and more kids playing the game.
Well, Messi was offered, I believe, $700 million to play for a club in Saudi Arabia, and he turned that down. So, and Cristiano Ronaldo's there. He's making, what, $600 million for one season. But you're not – the exposure in the Saudi Arabian League is not like you're playing in whether it be Premier League or La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, or even MLS. Messi, from what I was told, turned down that money because of the lifestyle, because of where he wanted his family to live. And Miami is the closest thing to being in Argentina that there is. There are a lot of Argentinians here, fans, restaurants. So I think it comes down to, do you want the money or do you want a lifestyle where you're still getting that exposure? Mm-hmm. Because let's be honest. I mean, how much have we heard about Cristiano Ronaldo? How many highlights have we seen of him playing in Saudi Arabia? I mean, I haven't seen anything other than one goal he had in a friendly and he was playing for Portugal.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, that's what I think is going to happen.
He's enjoying the money, and there's, you know, he's setting himself up. He's like these golfers, you know, that took the live money because they saw, well, it's guaranteed money just to sign, and then, you know, the purses are getting bigger and bigger. It's affected the PGA. They merged. All that stuff has happened. Just follow the money, I guess, is the wild thing. Mike, let's go back to like 1996, 97. You were with us at Fox 8. We have had a great friendship relationship, worked together for many years before you left Channel 8 and went down to Miami. This really was a great move for your career because you really have had an opportunity to cover so much down there in South Florida at a station that really reveres sports coverage, right?
I have, John, and you know, my 9.5 years at Channel 8 were some of the best years of my career, being from Akron and being around good people like you and just being home. But the opportunity presented itself in 96 after I went to the Olympics for our station at the time, and the bomb went off in Centennial Park, and I had a chance to work nationally, not only for, you know, doing stuff for us at Channel 8, but Channel 7 here in Miami used me more than anyone else other than Channel 8. And it opened the doors, and, you know, such a tragic event provided an opportunity for me to come to Miami. And I haven't looked back. It's just, I have done more than I could ever have even dared to dream, whether it be one of the greatest moments of my career was I came here in September 97. I got to come home in October 97. I covered the Marlins against the Indians at the time in the World Series. It was one of the greatest times of my life. But whether it be World Series, Super Bowls, NBA Finals, National Championships in football, Panthers recently in the Stanley Cup Finals against the Vegas Golden Knights, it's just been beyond my wildest dreams could I have even dared to dream this. And I'm just enjoying it, and I'm not done yet.
No, you're not, Mike. You're very young at heart. And the cool thing, I don't know if many of our folks that listen to this pod or even, you know, may have followed me on Channel 8 all the years I worked there, knowing that we've had, you know, a relationship, work together, and you're one of my guys, know that you are a master's athlete in your own right. You are an Olympic lifter, and you've been doing it for quite a, you know, quite a long time. What has that been like for you to be out there putting up the best that you have against other competition in these weightlifting tournaments that you've been training for and competing in for so many years?
It's something I always wanted to do, and I really didn't have the time to devote to it once I started my career in 82 at WAKR Channel 23 in Akron. And then once I came to Channel 8 in January of 87, it was more focused on my career and establishing myself. But it is something I've always wanted to do, to just for me, not to prove to anyone else, just to prove to myself. And whether it was when I was bobsledding as part of the U.S. national team in the 90s, and then making the switch to playing hockey when I came to Miami – on club teams, which I never played hockey back home, to getting back into Olympic lifting. And, you know, Olympic lifting has provided me the opportunity to not only compete nationally, but internationally. And it's just something that I had a love and passion for it. And, you know, to be honest with you, I wish I would have known back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And started back then, and to see what I really could have done at a younger age. But it's been great. I mean, I've got to go to Denmark, and I've got to go to Winnipeg, Canada. I've got to go to Puerto Rico and just compete against others and the best in the world, and also former Olympians for their countries.
Yeah.
It's been a wonderful experience.
That's really cool, Mike. And, you know, the kind of a neat thing to think about is that when I first got to Channel 8 in 1980, and one of my earliest stories that I recall doing was about the former Olympian gold medalist, Chuck Vincey. I think Garfield Heights might be where he is from exactly, but he's a, you know, Northeast Ohio man, and he won gold medals in a couple of Olympics, if I recall, maybe 1960. I'm not sure.
1960 exact. Rome. 1960 Rome.
Oh, there. And you, I guess what I'm in a roundabout way saying to you is, doggone it, if you'd grown up right in Cleveland or, you know, here in the city, you probably would have known of this guy as a kid, and you might have been lifting weights like Chuck Vincey and have been on that path as a young athlete versus you as a master's athlete.
I believe I would have. And to be honest with you, I enjoyed playing high school football at the Archbishop Hoban. I enjoyed playing college football at the College of Worcester. But if I would have known back then, I would have had a mentor, I probably wouldn't have done any of that. I probably would have just devoted myself to Olympic lifting and given it a shot to go to the Olympic trials and see what I could have done at that age.
It's really a cool sport. I grew up with a young man by the name who's now my age, 70, but Chris Waterman. He was a fantastic Olympic lifter my age, you know, many years when he started out as a young guy. And I always marveled at his incredible athleticism that he had, because you guys in Olympic lifting, you need to be strong, you have to be powerful, you have to be quick, you have to be steady, you have to be super athletic and almost balletic, if there is such a term, when you're lifting a weight high over your head in that one quick motion. How do you get the techniques down? It's probably an incredible amount of time that you have to work on that technique bit by bit to have it so seamless.
It is, and you, when I was earlier, when I started at 50, and I'm 64 and a half now, because I actually competed in 92 when I was back home in Cleveland, and that was the Ohio Games, and then I got back into it in 2000. But actually started to compete about 14 years ago on a national and international level. You do a lot of plyometrics. I mean, I used to be able to box jump up to my neck.
Wow.
And the movement is quick, explosive, and you do a lot of pulls, and you do a lot of plyometrics, and you do a lot of sprints. And they say Olympic weightlifters are probably the second fastest to Olympic sprinters, because it's such a quick muscle twitch movement. And that's what it is in Olympic weightlifting. It's a fractions of a second to get it over your head. And it's funny that when I was getting ready for the nationals, probably a year, 2 years before COVID, I was doing box jumps and it was up to my neck, and I hit the wall. I braced myself against the wall and I dislocated my right pinky finger. So I was like, man, if I broke my finger, I'm going to Savannah in 2 weeks to compete in the nationals. This is not going to happen. It's all right. So my first instinct was to just grab the bar, see if I can grab the bar. So my right pinky finger is sticking out at 3 o'clock. And I said, all right, well, I've heard football players pop it back into place. So I yanked it and popped it back into place and went pop. And that was it. You know, so I just kept going.
That's great. Well, first of all, you've had just an amazing career in the sense that you had the chance to cover so many wild things down in Miami, and here you are. You know, you're in your 60s, and you still have many years left that you want to do your job, but you're in the throes of one of the biggest sports stories, really, in South Florida, probably ever. Would you not say?
I would say yes. Again, we know when LeBron came, that was more of a South Florida story.
Yeah.
This is with Messi is a global story. And
sure,
the people that you see, when I went last Tuesday for his first practice, there was the girl next to me shooting was from the BBC on the left. On the right, it was someone from Argentina. And then a little bit down the road, couple of people down from India. I mean,
yeah,
it was amazing. It was simply amazing.
Well, I'll tell you, also dealing with the media, the soccer media, the football media, to say they're aggressive is probably one of the biggest understatements around, right?
Yes, and I'm saying that politely. It is not the etiquette that we're used to in the United States. I understand that those rules do not apply from the countries they come from because it's all so much and it's a mass of people. But for the most part, it was pretty calm, and I was a little surprised by it. I was actually a little surprised by the way it was, considering I've covered friendlies at Hard Rock Stadium between Argentina and Spain and other countries, and there the decor and the professionalism was not to our standards here in the United States. But it was better up till now. I mean, things could change, but it was better up till now.
Mikey, it's always great to get back in touch with you, to shoot the breeze. I wish you nothing but success the rest of your career, and obviously keep your sanity during Messi Mania in South Florida, and hope to visit with you when you're back up here in Northeast Ohio. But again, continued success, and thanks for being a good friend all these years, my man.
You've been the best friend, John, and I appreciate you asking me to be part of your podcast.
You got it, buddy. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thanks once again to Michael for a great conversation. It's always outstanding when we get a chance to chat. And over the course of the years, we've had many phone conversations as I've kept up on his career. And, you know, his career as a broadcaster is stellar in its own right. But what he's been able to do as a master's athlete has been quite remarkable. First of all, he is a member of both the U.S. Olympic Bobsled Federation and the U.S. Weightlifting Federation. In 1995, he was a member of the four-man national bobsled championship team, and he has won numerous Masters Olympic weightlifting titles over the years. In 2014, he represented Team USA at the Masters World Championships in Denmark. He is the U.S. National Masters Olympic weightlifting record holder in the 89K class. Absolutely outstanding as an athlete, and he continues to compete to this day in his mid-60s. Don't want to age you more than I have already, Michael, but just an outstanding athlete. And we've had a touch of Fox 8 on this podcast over the course of so many years. Here are some of the people that if you look in the archives, you'll hear interviews from folks that have Fox 8 connections. I spoke with the great Virgil Dominic. He is a more recent member who's been on the podcast. My colleague, Wayne Dawson, the morning anchor man, also a pastor at a suburban church in Cleveland. We interviewed Wayne. We've talked to John Sable, one of our newest members at Fox 8. My longtime friend, Lou Maglio, still the 6 p.m. and 10 p.m. anchor man at Channel 8, continues to work to this day. And as I mentioned, this podcast goes back to 2019. And so pre-pandemic, if you will, in 2019 and 2020, I interviewed Vince Cellini, the outstanding broadcaster, who, of course, was with the Golf Channel, was with CNN, with Turner Sports, and continues to work to this day, doing a lot of phenomenal work with the senior golf scene. Vince Cellini has been on the pod. Ken Carman, our nighttime sportscaster. I had Kenny. He, of course, is on in the mornings with Anthony Lima, the Ken Carman and Anthony Lima show at 92.3 The Fan. Andre Knott has been on the pod previously. He also is a great contributor to my baseball podcast as well. Always cool. If you check the archives, you'll hear an interview with Andre Knott. P.J. Ziegler, we had on the podcast, who continues to do work for the parent company of Channel 8 at many big events. And the leprechaun himself, Danny Coughlin, has been on the podcast as well. So a little bit of Fox 8 flavor there. Mike DePasquale, the most recent who has ties to Fox 8, being on the podcast with me. Thanks to all those folks. I hope you get a chance to go into the archives and check those out. And if you do like one, please share. And then, of course, subscribe, rate, and review the pod to help me grow it. And thank you very much for listening. Very much looking forward to our next opportunity to chat with you on the next edition of Telich Talks. But until then, we'll see you later. Have a good day.